Well, good afternoon. My first service in this facility. We stand way up here, don't we? Been traveling a little bit. A few weeks ago, I spoke in London, and I spoke about a topic that was topical and something that was on my mind about being thankful in an unthankful world. And it was around Thanksgiving, so it met with the season. And you know, part of that sermonette that I gave, I read the proclamation that George Washington wrote. How it was for a day to be set aside for the worship and for a prayer to God, an entire day. Was kind of amazing because I commented that I don't believe something like that would pass Congress and Senate in this day and age. A proclamation that mentioned God at least a half a dozen times about being the creator of the universe, the giver of all good things. Kind of amazing. But unfortunately, Thanksgiving isn't thought of that like that any longer. It's a day to be thankful. Maybe for your family. And that's good. That's good and well. It's a day to be thankful for your possessions, for the turkey that you're about to have, for a Cowboys win. Those are things to be thankful for. But you know, it's no longer set aside for a day of worship, a day of prayer to God. And I think that's unfortunate. So now, you know, and Thanksgiving is one of the national holidays that I believe that we can all agree with, a federal holiday. And now approaching in about a week, in some change, a day or so, a week and a day, we have another federal holiday, a national holiday that's coming up, one that we obviously don't agree with and that we really don't want to have any part in. So today I want to give a sermonette about Christmas. But I wanted to do something a little bit different. I don't want to give your typical Christmas sermonette or sermon. Most of us have been around in the church. There are some new around. But we understand the pagan origins, where this comes from, where that comes from. We understand where that comes from. You know, we take a look at Jeremiah 10 and so forth. And we see the things in there. And in years past, I've given sermonettes on where the Christmas tree came from. You know, your typical sermonettes where the Yule log came from and the trappings, the partying, the merrymaking, and so forth. And even one year, you may remember several years ago, a detailed sermonette that I gave about John the Baptist and Zacharias the father and how Christ couldn't have been born anywhere near December 25th because it's very easy to take a look at his service in the temple. When he was in the temple, you can discover that, what weeks he was in the temple, and you can do a little simple math, and you find out when you do that math that there's no way that Christ could have been born anywhere around December 25th, but instead around the Feast of Tabernacles, and that fits perfectly with the Scripture. Well, we also know that Christmas is not mentioned in the Scriptures, at least not favorably. There are a few places, like I alluded to. Jeremiah 10 talks about, well, that. And other things that we're not supposed to do. And it's a pretty good description, isn't it, about what we're not supposed to do. And if we do have some newer members, and I know we do, that aren't as familiar with those customs and where they came from, we have a booklet, From Holidays to Holy Days, God's Plan for You. It's on our website. You can read that. It covers Christmas a little bit. Some of the older booklets, The Plain Truth About Christmas, was the first booklet I read when I came into the church. It's the one that really ticked me off a little. And it got my attention. But That's out there. There are other places to read about the symbolism. What I wanted to do is something different today, talking about this national, this federal holiday that's coming up, is look at the Christmas history in America. How did this become a federal holiday? And how is it even constitutional? You know, the separation of church and state. How is that even possible that we can have this holiday? So I want to begin by reading a little bit from an article called Christmas History in America. Answer some of these questions. It was early in the 17th century, a wave of religious reform changed the way Christmas was celebrated in Europe when Oliver Cromwell and his Puritan forces took over England in 1645. They vowed to get rid of decadence in England as part of their effort. They canceled Christmas. The Pilgrims, the English separatists that came to America in 1620, were even more orthodox than their Puritan beliefs than Cromwell was. And as a result, Christmas was not a holiday in early America. So it just wasn't in our history. And as a matter of fact, from 1659 to 1861, the holiday was outlawed in Boston. So I did a little research. I wanted to find where that was outlawed. And I found the law that went into place that was written. It was written May 11, 1659 by the Massachusetts Bay Colony Legislature. And it says this: for preventing disorder arising in several places within this jurisdiction, by reason of some still observing such festivals that were superstitiously kept in other countries, to the great dishonor of God and offense of others, it is therefore ordered that whoever shall be found observing any such day, such as Christmas or the like, whether forbearing of labor, feasting, or any other way, every such person shall pay an 5-shilling fine to the country. That's kind of interesting. And that remained in effect for 22 years in Boston until more immigrants came from Europe and demanded the law be removed. Continuing in this article, after the American Revolution, English customs fell out of favor, including Christmas. In fact, Congress was in session on December 25, 1789, the first Christmas under America's new Constitution. It wasn't even declared federal holiday until June 26, 1870. In the 19th century, Americans began to embrace Christmas. Americans reinvented Christmas and changed it from a raucous carnival holiday into a family-centered day of peace and nostalgia. Kind of interesting how that article was. Well, you know, you would think that the law that was written, because Thanksgiving was written, the law that was written making this a federal holiday would be full of talk of God and the baby Jesus. Wouldn't you think that? Thanksgiving was dedicated to the worship of God in a day of prayer, because we all know Jesus is the reason for the season. Right? Wrong. The official holiday in America is not religious at all. Not totally secular, but it's not set aside as a religious holiday. The writers were very careful in their wording. And it was grouped, when it became a holiday, it was grouped with several other holidays. And I found the Act of Congress. Very short. It says this: being enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that the following days, to wit, the first day of January, commonly called New Year's Day, the fourth day of July, the 25th day of December, commonly called Christmas Day, and any day appointed or recommended by the President of the United States as a day of public fast or thanksgiving shall be holidays within the District of Columbia, period. There's a little bit more to it that just says, if payday falls on this day, then here's how you pay. The rest of the legislation is just about how you would pay federal employees. That's it. No talk of religion. No talk of Christ. Nothing. It was only declared a federal holiday after 33 states declared it a state holiday. Christmas was much more popular in America in the southern states. The North didn't want anything to do with it. Very popular in the southern states. Alabama in 1836, Louisiana and Arkansas followed in 1838. Those were the first three states to make it a holiday. Back to that article, in the years after the Civil War, Christmas traditions spread across the country. Children's books played an important role in spreading the customs and celebrating Christmas, especially the tradition of trimmed trees and gifts delivered by Santa Claus. By the last quarter of the 19th century, Americans eagerly decorated trees, caroled, baked, shopped for Christmas season. And since that time, materialism, media, advertising, and mass marketing has made Christmas what it is today. I found a timeline of events, which I thought was interesting. A timeline of how Christmas grew its traditions in America. Because it all didn't come from Europe. Of course, in the 1600s, it was illegal to mention St. Nicholas's name, to light candles, to do anything like that, exchange gifts. But by the 17th century, the Dutch immigrants brought a tradition of Sinter Claus, S-I-N-T-E-R. In 1773, Santa Claus first appeared in American media under the name Saint, S-T period, A, like the abbreviation Aaron, just A, Claus, Saint A. Claus. Say that three times fast, and you'll figure out where we get the name. In 1822, a dentist by the name of Clement Moore wrote a poem. It was called An Account of the Vision from St. Nicholas. It better became known as The Night Before Christmas and all through the house. Not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung from the chimney with care, with hopes that St. Nicholas would soon be here. Oh, the memories. I grew up outside the church. What can I say? 1841, J.D. Parkinson, a Philadelphia merchant, hired someone to dress up in a Kris Kringle outfit and climb the chimney of his store. Guess what came from that? You're in front of me. Got a guy in a red suit hanging from a chimney. Guess what came from that? In 1860, Abraham Lincoln commissioned a drawing of Santa with Union soldiers. This demoralized the Confederate Army because the North didn't care about Christmas, but it was popular in the South. So Santa was on the wrong side. It was thought to be one of the first examples of psychological warfare that was used. And the timeline continues about how this all evolved. Well, how is this all constitutional? How do we continue to have this holiday in the United States? The ACLU should be going nuts. Well, they have. They have. They've sued a number of times. The latest case that I could find was in 1999, believe it or not, in an appellate court in Ohio, where the constitutionality of Christmas was brought before the court. They looked at previous rulings. They looked at one in 1971. It was called the Lemon case. The guy's name was Lemon, versus the United States, which became a challenge of constitutionality. And here's what they said. They said any law making anything a holiday, the statute must have secular legislative purpose. Second, its principal or primary effect must be one that neither advances or inhibits religion. And it must foster, and it must not foster an excessive government entanglement with religion. So that's their three-pronged test, and here was their ruling. Christmas serves a secular purpose, including the accommodation of the calendar of public activities. Second, the holiday is not primarily advancing or inhibiting religion. It's recognized as a cultural significance holiday. And third, the court could not find the requisite entanglement by merely closing federal buildings and declaring a holiday. The court noted that the federal employees can observe the holiday as they please, and they're not required to perform any religious services or activities. So the court looked at a few other issues, equal standing, equal protection under the law, before dismissing the case against Christmas. The court, it says here in the write-up, was in a tough position. On one hand, it couldn't declare that Christmas is simply a secular holiday about shopping and cutting down trees, because that would be against the Christian tenet. But on the other hand, it couldn't describe it as a celebration of the birth of Christ, because that would endorse religion. Instead, it walked a fine line, ultimately declining, as the court itself described, to play the role of Grinch. So I thought that was interesting. So the challenges all failed. Well, we talked a little bit about what Jeremiah 10 says. And we know that this holiday, the core, even though some of the things and traditions were created in America, we know where the core comes from, how it comes from other religions and paganism. So let's see what God thinks about that. If we turn to Deuteronomy 12. And these are very familiar scriptures to all of us. Deuteronomy 12. And I want to read this in the New Living Translation, beginning in verse 1. These are the decrees and regulations you must be careful to obey when you live in the land that the Lord your God of your ancestors is giving you. You must obey them as long as you live. When you drive out the nations that live there, you must destroy all the places where they worship and their gods, high on the mountains, up on the hills, and under every green tree. Break down their altars and smash their sacred pillars. Burn their asherah poles and cut down their carved idols. Completely erase the name of their God. Verse 4, do not worship the Lord your God in the way these pagan people worship their gods. We're told not to do that. But it's just a cute family celebration. The lights are pretty. Well, that's fine if you don't care what God thinks. That's just fine. We're not supposed to come close to that. Drop down to verse 30. Do not fall into the trap. This is the New Living Translation continuing. Do not fall into the trap of following their customs and worshiping their gods. Do not inquire about their gods, saying, how do these nations worship their gods? I want to follow their example. You must not worship the Lord your God the way other nations worship their gods, for they perform for their gods every detestable act that the Lord hates. He actually hates that. It's not a pretty thing to do. They even burn their sons and daughters as sacrifices to their God. So they do very detestable. Verse 32, be careful to obey all the commands I give you. You must not add anything to them or subtract anything from them. But you know, that's way over in the Old Testament. That's Old Testament stuff. Well, there is similar wording in the very last chapter of the very last book in Revelation 22. So turn over there, Revelation 22. You can't get any farther towards the end of the book than this. Revelation 22, verse 18. And I solemnly declare to everyone who hears the words of the prophecy written in this book. If anyone adds to anything to what is written here, God will add that person to the plagues described in this book. And if anyone removes any of the words from this book and prophecy, God will remove that person's share in the tree of life, in the holy city that are described in this book. So, it's very important to God. It's very important. I thought you might find this history a little bit interesting, a little bit different take on Christmas. I hope you enjoyed some of the history. It's an aspect of Christmas that you probably don't hear so much about. But we do need to understand that God hates these things. That's what he says in Deuteronomy 12. It's not just pretty lights and pretty trees.